Wow, that got quiet fast. Mr. Reed, how are we doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. All right, here we are. Moving on to item number 6. Mr. Reed's going to give us an update. Freshwater Tissue Company, Samoa Pulp Mill.
Let me start off by apologizing. My voice seems to be leaving me. Good morning. I'm Charles Reed, staff engineer with the Water Board. And as you mentioned, I'm going to be giving you a status update for the Samoa pulp mill. I would point out this is an informational item only, and we don't expect you to be taking any action today, although I'd be happy to entertain any of your questions after my presentation. The slide is up just to give you an idea where the location of the pulp mill is. If you didn't know, you probably saw it as you drove into town. If we could see through the black back wall here, you could see the pulp mill out across the bay. Could you go to the next slide, Drew? There's just one. That's a prettier picture. We'll keep that one up while we talk. I don't really have a PowerPoint presentation, so I'll just be giving you a brief, hopefully brief, status update. So I hope you've had a chance to read the summary report. In it, I've just summarized some of the recent activity at the pulp mill. Well, the last time I was, and I'll try to summarize it again for you now. Last time I was before you was in March 2009, when the board was terminating the MPDES permit for the Samoa pulp mill. The pulp mill had ceased operation in October 2008, and we decided at that time that it would be best to terminate the permit to prevent the automatic transfer to the new owner. We did this because the existing permit was inadequate. It didn't include some requirements that we believed should be there. There was the previous owner, an operator of the pulp mill, had a very poor compliance record. And at the same time, we were in the process of renewing the permit. So there was a draft permit out in the street. And it was clear that the new owners couldn't comply with the requirements in the new permit. So we thought it best to terminate the permit at the time. And as I mentioned, prior to the termination of the permit, the mill was purchased by the current owners of the facility, and that was in 2009, and they're currently known as Freshwater Tissue Company. Freshwater Tissue Company, also known as FTC, had anticipated that they would restart the mill sometime in 2009, provided that they had an adequate supply of wood chips, the market was cooperating, and they could obtain financing. They have reportedly tied up all those loose ends, and in January 2010, they submitted a permit application to produce unbleached kraft pulp, as well as unbleached kraft pulp in the future when market conditions were favorable. Region Board staff has processed this application, and we've prepared a draft permit and related documents. And it seems like a pretty straightforward process. We get an application and put together a permit and get it adopted. Unfortunately, this permit reissuance is a fairly complicated one for a number of reasons. First of all, the discharge cannot immediately comply with the applicable BOD limits for either the existing bleach process or for the unbleached limits that we intend to put in the permit. FTC has indicated that it will spend between $28 and $30 million to construct into the pipe biological wastewater treatment facilities to meet the limits, both the bleached and the unbleached limits. But they require up to 3 years to obtain local permits, complete design, and construct the treatment plant before they can comply with the limits. So we've been struggling, staff has been struggling, to find a permitting mechanism for this proposal. It's fairly unusual and unconventional for us to issue a permit where the discharger cannot comply. And we've been looking at the legality, whether we could actually do this legally, and how, if we can do it legally, how exactly can we do it. And lastly, the regulatory and compliance history of the small pulp mill has convinced us that it would be prudent to proceed with the permitting process with caution. And I wanted to take a little time to go through the regulatory history, it's a little bit of the compliance history, to give the board an appreciation of our perspective on the Samoa pulp mill. Staff has been overseeing this mill since 1965, and it has left a significant impression. And let me go through that right now. So I'll start as far back as 1972, when the Federal Water Pollution Control Act was adopted, and in 1977 the amendments were also adopted, and this is commonly known as the Clean Water Act. It required the EPA to develop and establish minimum performance standards for discharges of waste to the waters of the United States. The discharger groups were primarily in two groups. The first are municipal wastewater treatment plants, publicly owned treatment works. The board's very familiar with these permits. We do them a number of times every year, renewing permits. You're familiar with the standards. They're secondary standards for BUD and suspended solids. The effluent limits are concentration and mass-based. There's a percent removal requirement for BUD and suspended solids. The group two dischargers are a little bit more uncommon for you to see. We don't have many of them in the region. Actually, only a handful. These are existing industrial dischargers. So what EPA did for these is they gathered information from U.S. industries to develop these nationwide performance standards. And they developed industry-specific standards, also known as effluent limitation guidelines. And I should say, I may slip in calling these ELGs, because effluent limitation guidelines is not really slip off my tongue very well. So they developed these industry-specific standards for each industrial category and subcategory. And EPA's objective was to ensure that similar facilities would be regulated in the same manner, irrespective of the facility location. That is, for instance, a pulp and paper mill on the West Coast would be required to meet the same effluent limit guidelines as a similar plant on the East Coast. Effluent limit guidelines for the pulp and paper mills are based on the final product. Pulp or paper would be a good example, and the pulping process. That pulp plant may be using bleached or bleach to produce the final product, or no bleach, or sulfite, or some other method of bleaching. And it's important to remember, when the EPA did the survey, they assumed there was a baseline pollution control technology, and for pulp mills, it was a secondary biological treatment system. And NPDES permits, mass-based effluent limits, are based on these effluent limit guidelines, and the long-term production rate established by established for BOT and TSS, suspended solids. And I wanted to give you an idea of the magnitude of these limits. They're quite a bit larger than you would see for a POTW. I'll use an example, the production rate of 700 air-dried tons per year, which is the production rate that the Samoa pulp mill produces at maximum production. That would translate into a daily BOD limit of around 21,000 pounds of BOD per day and a monthly average of around 11,000 pounds per day. For unbleached mills using the same production rate, it's around 7,800 pounds per day as a daily maximum and 3,900 pounds per day as a monthly average. And unbleached limits, if you're following along with that, are considerably lower. About one-third the BOD loading of bleached pulp process waste. That's because unbleached pulp has the wastewater from unbleached pulp production has an inherently lower BOD load. So we have these effluent limit guidelines for the pulp and paper industry, and it put some of a pulp mill at the time in the 70s in a very difficult position. They were one of a handful of mills, only a handful of mills, that had no pollution control system whatsoever. So they were not even included in the development of the effluent guidelines, effluent limitation guidelines for the pulp and paper industry. Nevertheless, under these new regulations, the mill still had to comply with these new effluent limit guidelines by 1977. For bleach pulp. At the time, the pulp mill had no requirement to meet the unbleached limits. In response to this requirement to meet these effluent guidelines, Louisiana-Pacific, who was the operator at the time, sought regulatory relief from compliance with the effluent, the ELGs, and obtained a variance from the EPA, arguing that the Samoa pulp mill was fundamentally different from other mills because it had no treatment, therefore because it wasn't included in the development of the ELGs, and it also discharged to the ocean. In the 80s, the Louisiana Pacific also sought and obtained alternate BOD limits through a special act of Congress, and these limits were as high as around 96,000 pounds per day, about four times what the effluent limit guideline required of all other pulp mills. Louisiana Pacific relied on pollution prevention measures and other best management practice to meet these effluent limits, rather than biological treatment, which was the industry standard now and to this day. Over this time, the mill was in actually good compliance with the BOD limits, the high BOD limits, but there were violations for toxicity, pH, and receiving water color. And as a result of those violations, they were sued by Surfrider in the early 90s, and that resulted in a consent decree in 92 with the EPA, Surfrider, and the pulp mill, which required that the discharge from the pulp mill meet effluent limit guidelines by 1997. The pulp mill also agreed to do a number of upgrades, improvements in the pulp mill to satisfy this consent decree, including best management practices for spill control. They installed a steam stripping system, and they extended the outfall by approximately 1 mile, and replaced the chlorine bleaching system with a chlorine-free bleaching system. And it's worthwhile to give Louisiana Pacific some credit here. These were fairly expensive improvements, and they did result in some water quality improvement. The Regional Water Board, also in 94, issued a cease and desist order that provided Louisiana Pacific 3 years to meet these effluent limits. I had intended to talk about compliance a little bit, but I think I won't. I think I'll just summarize it briefly, saying that the mill wasn't compliant in the early days because the effluent limits for BOD were so high. They complied in later years by producing unbleached pulp with bleach limits being in place. If you recall, I mentioned a little earlier, the waste from unbleached pulp is inherently lower in BOD, so it makes sense that if you produce unbleached pulp, you can meet the bleach limits pretty routinely. In the early 2000s, the pulp mill started experimenting a little bit more, using a little bit more frequently their chlorine-free bleaching system, and consequently the compliance was a little bit more inconsistent. And as they increased use of chlorine-free bleaching, they continued to get more violations. And this came to a head really in 2008, where they exclusively, almost exclusively produced chlorine-free bleach pulp and had... a number of violations of the monthly average and the daily maximum. Violations in 2005 and 2007 resulted in enforcement action by the board and ACLs in excess of $900,000, which have yet to be satisfied. And this was under the operation of Evergreen Pulp, who is no longer the owner. So Evergreen Pulp sold the pulp mill to the current owners in early 2009. So my point in going over this was to give you a feel for these effluent guidelines. The fact that they've been in place for quite a long time, and most pulp mills in the country have complied with these a long time ago. And I want to leave you to a couple of thoughts of what I just talked about, effluent guidelines, is that for the small pulp mill, twice there have been mandates for them to meet these effluent limit guidelines, in 1997 and in 1977. In both cases, there was a time schedule to meet these effluent limit guidelines. And over the years, we've received numerous assurances from the owners that they would achieve these limits, they would comply with the permit, and we wouldn't have to be taking enforcement action. So that brings us today. We are what seems like in the same position. We have a new owner of a mill who is making the same assurances and asking for a time schedule to meet these effluent limit guidelines that have been in place since 77, and could have been complied with 35 years ago. So that said, staff has developed a permit, a draft permit, that we hope to have out in the streets soon in order to meet a June 10th board hearing to overcome some of the technical issues of issuing a permit that the discharger can't comply with. We are also developing a cease and desist order with a time schedule and other interim requirements that would allow FTC, Freshwater Tissue, time to construct the facilities that would enable them to comply or to come into compliance. And this cease and desist order also we intend to have it before you in June of this year. So that's going to conclude by the status update, and I'd be happy to ask, entertain any questions you may have.
Thanks, Charles. I'm sure a few of us have some questions. One that comes to mind are, first, I appreciate your working so hard in such a short time frame, and I know it's been a very aggressive time frame, and this has been moved straight to the front of your workload to try to suss out different pathways in making this work and working with Freshwater Tissue as we receive information from them to see how we can make this happen. And we've been relying on information from them in order for us to take the next steps, and so that back and forth has been helpful to make that happen. So we seem to have identified a potential pathway that may be putting us in the same position that we've been in previously, but it sounds like there are some protection measures built into this one, such as a timeline built in with a CDO. Are there penalties for not meeting that timeline proposed, or is that something that's being... So we have a timeline that's proposed. Okay, fine. What happens if the timelines aren't met?
Well, I can say we're still working on the details.
Sure.
And nothing's really been decided on, and I don't know that I could commit to anything at this point.
No, and that's fine. And I guess maybe overarching with that, are we prohibited legally or policy-wise from doing that? I'm assuming we've been checking on that in parallel with trying to draft these up, but it seems that there's – I have that question also.
I might defer that to our
– Of course.
We have been considering options ranging from some kind of the time schedule would have to have – milestones associated with the construction, so we would know early on if that construction was not happening. And I think in terms of the way we craft the CDO as well as the permit itself, that if we see that that construction is not proceeding, some way to either revoke the permit or some kind of penalties. Another option would be some kind of bonding. Perhaps Mr. Simpson, who I see is here, might be able to address what some of the options that they're willing to entertain as well.
Okay. And then we're scheduled to have this back before us in June, so we have a short period of time to work these details out. Okay.
Well, what we don't want is to go down the path that we've gone before.
Yeah.
By granting a time schedule and have nothing materialize at the end.
Any other board members? Okay. Thank you, Charles.
Right, thank you.
Yeah. I know Mr. Simpson's here. I'd like to invite him to come up and speak if he was planning to or if you'd like to. Thanks.
Not guilty. First, thanks for letting me address today. I didn't plan on addressing, and I do want to thank Kat and her staff because they have been jumping through hoops, and I'm greatly appreciative of that. One of the challenges that we have been facing all along is everyone wants to know that you have the entitlements to operate. It's difficult, especially given the collapse that we've seen in the banking industry. It's just virtually impossible to borrow any funds from banks today, so it's pretty much all private funds and investors. I accept the fact that there have been a number of owners who have pushed back in pollution. And I accept the fact that carries a stigma that unfortunately causes doubt in new ownership such as ours. But I will hang my hat on one thing. I can still make the claim that I am the only person that has ever signed a consent decree to commit a pulp mill in 1992 to chlorine-free while I was managing for Louisiana Pacific. And I still think that is significant today because it does mean that our effluents is dioxin-free. I don't want to – the next thing I'll tell you is certainly not a defense because the mill can do better. I mean, let's face it. If you're putting anything out into the ocean at all, it sounds significant. If you hear 20,000 pounds of BOD on a daily basis, it sounds significant. Now, the reality of it is there's lots of science that suggests that the receiving water, such as the Pacific Ocean, is significantly different than that of a river or a lake or a stream. Nevertheless, the public won't buy it. So while I kind of feel like putting in a secondary treatment plant is a bit like building a mansion and putting in an outhouse. The reality of it is the only way today to assure that we can reduce BOD limits far below standards that have been set by EPA. So we haven't had any argument pertaining to that discussion whatsoever. It's been volunteered from day one. The second thing that, I will tell you is that you do need assurance. You don't need to be in another situation like you have been with past owners. And I've heard all of the stories. So what we've had in mind is that one way or another, we'll either bond the projects that we're talking about doing, but we will come up with a way that assures the public that these things are all being done in a timely manner. Now, if we could get the permitting process through more quickly, then I'd love to have that secondary treatment in place a year from now. The construction time is about a year. It's the permitting and all the details behind it that take the time. If I thought for one second that we could not do a better job controlling the daily BODs of the pulp mill, and if I thought that there was irreparable damage going on as a result of those BODs, I wouldn't be before you today at all. But I think that the work that has been done by Humboldt State and the past environmental should relieve your minds a little bit with regard to BOD. I think that we will certainly do a better job involving environmental advocacy groups as well as individuals who have concerns. I'd rather have them come in and get on board with us right away than have them complaining because they don't really understand what's happening. So I can assure you that we will be as transparent as I think we've been all along. We've put our business plan out on a website for everybody to see. I've just updated that again, and I'd encourage you to see it. Now, you can say, well, this is just a stroke of a pen, but the reality of it is that right now you'll see on the website that we intend not only to spend considerable amount of money starting up, but we intend to spend $70 million over 5 years just improving the pollution controls and our capacity to manage that plant properly. But it's what I would tell you is you don't blame it on the plant. And you don't blame it on the people that are in the plant. You got to blame it on the ownership. Ownership either wants to challenge technology or it runs from it. In this situation, I can tell you right now, I wouldn't be involved in this if I wasn't really motivated by challenging technology. I had the opportunity to do it with lots of money behind me during Louisiana Pacific days. We did reduce, if you go back and look, before we put in steam stripping and things like that, BODs were 47,000, 50,000 pounds a day. That mill should be able to get down consistently to, in its current shape, 20,000 pounds a day. That's what you'd like to believe. Evergreen, in defense of them, they did spend $25 million during their ownership in construction projects. And so there were some positives that were accomplished there. But it didn't go far enough. And so there's no resistance to treatment. And here's my whole argument to everybody. I just returned from China. I spent about 8 days over there. I've spent a tremendous amount of time in South America. Personally, I think it's irresponsible of us as a nation to close mills that are already cleaner than what we compete against in foreign nations. Because all we're really doing is dumping our garbage in somebody else's backyard. I think we also have to provide, if you're going to have forestry, you have to provide foresters a prescription to thin tan oak as a prescription rather than just hack and squirt and kill it and leave it where it is. I think these mills, they serve a purpose. But it is irresponsible to just close things up. I think what we have to do is challenge ourselves. I think we have to set international standards for pollution. And I'd love to see something put in place where we're taxing the hell out of products coming into the United States that are made with less stringent regulations than we have. So what we're going to do is raise the bar. And that's what I'm hoping to get this community centered around. I want to raise the bar. I want to really, really reduce BOD to the level that everybody else understands technologies available to do it. In 1994, my goal was really simple. I wanted to force everybody to chlorine-free bleaching because I believe that dioxins are a problem, regardless of the quantity that they, that they're put into oceans, lakes, or streams. So this may be our opportunity to come back and once again set the bar. So the only thing that I'm that I'd like to leave you with today is that I don't want to wear the legacy of the previous owners. And so I would ask that you at least allow us to show you what we can do, and let's try and put things in place that give you the assurances that past owners haven't done. And if we do that, that's shame on me if I mess up. But that is not going to happen under my watch. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we've got two other speaker cards, and I just wanted to set a general reminder that, you know, this is an informational item, and we're not taking any board action on this today. So with that, I'd like to invite Carol Binder to come up, please, followed by Xander Manns.
Hello, I'm Carol Binder. I live in Eureka, in West Eureka, near the Samoa pulp mill. I ask you not to issue them a new water permit when it comes before you. As you know, they are asking to start up without meeting environmental standards. I ask you to enforce the law. Please look at the evidence closely between now and the possible hearing on the water permit. The mill site is seriously toxic, and the mill owners are being made to clean it up, but it won't be easy. The results of the tests on the wells are on GeoTracker, and I ask you, please, do not approve this mill without looking at those. They're very long, and you think, oh, and you go down, and it says ND, 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 and then you get to the serious stuff, and you get a feel for what you're talking about. There's pages and pages of chemicals and that all exceed the reporting levels. And then if you put that next to the Prop 65 list of cancer-causing agents, you see that a lot of these, or most of these, are Prop 65 things that are determined by the state of California to cause cancer and birth defects. For example, in one readings, and they're kind of hard because they're readings on different dates for different wells, for arsenic, chromium, manganese, and nickel are all close to 1,000 times the reporting level. Hexavalent chromium is also listed as a serious concern. Hexavalent chromium, remember the Aaron Brockovich movie? I'm not a scientist, but this can't be good. So this is all in the mills before they start up again. That's what's there now, and that has not been cleaned up. So they plan to add to this toxic load and then pump it in the ocean. They have no way to meet these water standards, as they've admitted, and it will take 2 to 3 years to build a treatment plant. Furthermore, they don't have the money for upgrades and cleanups. You will notice that in their permit application, they say that money for system improvements depends on generating income from the pulp mill in 2010. I ask you to find the facts for yourself and ask yourself, would I want to live near this plant? Would I let my children swim in the water? Then think about the long-term legacy to the ocean and the planet. There is already an area of low oxygen off the coast of the Pacific Northwest. We may gain some jobs at the mill only to lose them in the fishing industry. We are learning that there are limits to how much toxic waste we can throw in the ocean and the air. What price do you want your children and grandchildren to pay so freshwater pulp can start up? Those of us who live near the mill have breathed the poison and paid the health consequences. We saw the horrible clouds that came when they thought no one that mattered would notice. Evergreen pulp said they cared. They said they would be in compliance if they just got one more variance. They wore green shirts to meetings and smooths with the powerful. We coughed and got sick. Then Evergreen left town, leaving no forwarding address. Now Freshwater is making promises, but Mr. Simpson is already breaking the promise that the mill would operate if it was not up to code. He would not operate if it was not up to code. He wants to start up now and clean up maybe when he can afford it. Please think carefully. Please think beyond economics and politics. Please do what is right for people and for the health of the ocean and the planet. And I want to say that there are just two of us here to speak, but there are many, many, many people for whom this is an extremely emotional and gut issue. People who've gotten sick from the mill, people who have come forth before and felt humiliated and not listened to. And this time they said, oh, no, I'm just not going to do that to myself because I don't think it's going to make a difference. And that's kind of too bad. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Sandra Mass, followed by Felice Pace.
Good morning, board members, and I want to thank staff for their research and analysis. And I want to thank Mr. Simpson for his at least understanding of some of our problems. And I want to thank you for having this opportunity for us to discuss this, even though it's not a time of decision. I want to start to say that we are tracking this project, and we've talked to a lot of people about it, and people don't believe that the mill is going to start again. They just say, oh, that'll never happen. They've too many agencies, requirements to meet, and they can't do it. They don't have the money to pay the past violations and come up with the money to build. So a lot of people just couldn't even believe that this was happening and aren't here. There are other people. I live right in that neighborhood right over there with the little gables sticking out between the trees. And there's a big mix there of people who are fixing up these houses and have lived here for a long time in beautiful homes. And there's also a huge population of people living in care facilities because it has historically been a low-income area impacted by pollution from 101 and the pulp mill. And it has been kept that way, and this care industry has grown and grown. And there are a lot of people there who suffer from this pollution who don't really think they even have the right to complain. They're happy to have a place to be. One of my neighbors has asbestosis. Whenever there was something happening at the mill that wasn't right, an ambulance would come and take him to the hospital and he'd be gone for a few days. Anyhow, these people aren't here either. my concern is not just about the water, it's also about the air and forest. I really thank Mr. Simpson for mentioning the tan oaks because they were called a weed tree in the draft EIR that the county produced, and the Native Americans considered it a sacred tree. It's a huge source of acorns that are still eaten and provide a stable and have for centuries. And I'm glad he's paying attention to that. I first got involved in this over air quality issues because living here, I thought I was being so smart when I moved here. And the first thing I did was go to the air quality board office and ask for information on the pulp mill. And from what I read, it sounded pretty good, state of the art, everything. And I moved in only to find out that there was one violation after another after I got here. And blowouts. We neighbors had to report the violations oftentimes and complain about them. I am also concerned about air quality, I mean water quality, because of my concerns for the environment and for people who use the water recreationally and for the businesses that rely upon it, fishing and oysters. And I don't believe that 120 or 160 jobs at the pulp mill are enough to poison the bay and ocean for the rest of the people here. I have a huge problem with after-the-fact enforcement of anything. I worked as a city and environmental planner for 30 years in the Bay Area. And after the fact, enforcement is really, really impossible. As you can see from the past violations, you keep getting violations and nobody pays the fines. And the people who are impacted by the problem continue to suffer from diseases. Nature continues to degrade, and other employments are kept away, and our economy falters. I would like to see that the staff and the board really consider, can FTC afford the required improvements? Can they afford to design them? Can they afford to build them? Do they have the money? Will they have the money to do this? When Evergreen was in, whenever they needed money for fines or enforcement equipment construction, they just fired that plant up and burned it as quick as they could burn and exceeded the air quality standards. So I think it's a big bugaboo, and I hope that you will not grant this permit. And I just want everyone to know that this is happening and we're tracking this. Thank you.
Thank you. Felice.
Thank you. Felice Pace here for the North Group Redwood Chapter Sierra Club on this one. And the only reason I'm here is because our conservation chair, Diane Beck, had to be at another meeting in another county. But I am the chair of our water committee. And I just want to clarify, because our group reviewed a proposal from Freshwater previously, and we, that previous proposal from Mr. Simpson and from Freshwater, we wound up endorsing conditionally and subject to full environmental review in compliance with all applicable laws. And the project, I just want to clarify for you and for the public that the project that is before you today is a totally different proposal. Well, maybe not total, but, you know, 90, it's still about producing paper, I guess, some form of paper. But it's not the proposal that we reviewed. The North Group has not reviewed the new proposal, but I can tell you that as the water chair, I have great concerns with what I've heard today. I think we undermine the law when we make unusual exceptions for circumstances that are not unusual. It's not unusual that an entrepreneur can't get the money to do the project he wants to do and winds up wanting to do something that's has other problems. That's not all that unusual. And we just can't make exceptions for every one of those, so we shouldn't make exceptions for any of them. That's a personal opinion. The North Group has not taken a position, but we want to be clear once again that this is not the previous proposal that we had conditionally endorsed. Answer any questions if it's not clear. Thank you.
Thanks, Richard. That's all I have for speaker cards. Charles, did you have anything to conclude on that, or are we okay? Any board member questions?
Mr. Chair, can I ask? Charles, can I ask you to come up, please?
By the way, thanks for your presentation and some of the history of this. A couple questions. Ms. Binder indicated that there's groundwater impacts out here on GeoTracker, which indicates that there's some type of impact to waters of the state that underlie the site, but that, to clarify, that's not what this permit is about.
That's correct.
This is an MPDES permit for processed water that outfalls to the Pacific Ocean.
Right. The groundwater contamination is being dealt with in our cleanup unit. It's as a result of past practices at the mill, and these contaminants shouldn't make it out into the. They'd be prohibited from being discharged through the ocean outfall.
Okay, fair enough. There was talk in the staff report, and just wanted to get some clarification, that there could be a low-threat discharge permit issued for at least some of the maintenance part of this process of the restarting of this plant. Is that in play? Is that possible here? And that possible act gives an interim
that
step?
Fell by the wayside. Okay. It was that was in play when I drafted this, but we've already excluded that as a possibility, and we've decided that for the purposes of freshwater tissue, they need a full pulp production permit in order to get the financing. So the low threat permit was a non-starter for them, and it wasn't going to go anywhere, so we just dropped it.
So the way that this is potentially being structured now is that there would be a full MPDS permit with the CDO, a cease and desist order, that's automatically starting. But as I understand from what I've heard today, is that then there would be time schedule orders built into that, that then it's incumbent upon Mr. Simpson and his operating group to meet those, and if they do not meet those, then we have at least a mechanism to either get compliance or the type of enforcement we need to ensure that we get what we need.
Yeah, they'll have a number of tasks to complete to demonstrate that they're on the path to constructing this these treatment facilities.
Okay. And given the local interest, not only from what we've heard today, but some of the other outside forces here, this process goes forward, comes back to us in June under a full public process. So, for instance, the Sierra Club could comment on the proposal that's before us now, as could we, as could the public and interested parties.
Yes, we expect to circulate the permit and the cease and desist order very soon, you know, within, I hate to give a date.
It's okay, you don't have to.
Very soon.
Okay.
In order to meet the June agenda, it would have to be very soon.
Okay.
Imminent.
Thanks, Charles.
Anybody else? Okay, thanks. Getting ready to move on to our next item.